Hello, hello. 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 Hello and welcome to another Word Monkeys podcast. My name is Matt Brown. Hope you're doing all right. I'm a children's author. I have written a load of books that you can go and buy. Oh, please buy them. Please. They want to be bought so badly. I've got a series about a boy who creates a time machine out of a sandwich. And I'm currently reading a chapter a day of my book, Mutant Zombies Cursed My School Trip, which you can find on my Facebook page every day, 4 p.m, facebook.com/MattBrownWriter. Today's Word Monkeys guest is a writer, comedian, producer of TV and radio, filmmaker, human, Danny Wallace. He is a really brilliant writer. He's written a load of books, and he's written one of my favourite books, which is called Yes Man, which he wrote in the early 2000s, and which was then made into a film with Jim Carrey, which I wanted to chat to him about, so I do. I chat to him about that a little bit later. But he's also written a really great series for kids, which is all about Hamish Ellerby, who squares up to some pretty terrifying monsters with his friend Alice and other members of the Paws Defence Force, PDF. So I recommend those hugely. But I would point out to you that it is currently, as I speak now, late April 2020. So we are in about week 6 of lockdown in this country, the COVID-19 lockdown. And I spoke to Danny when it was about week 3 or 4 of lockdown. And I feel that I now feel quite differently about the whole lockdown situation than I did when I spoke to Danny. Like, the last week has been really tough. I don't know how it's been for you, but really feel like I've hit a humongous wall. But it was nice to listen back to a more optimistic me and Danny having a chat. So we talk about all sorts of things, but I did want to find out how lockdown was going for him.
Lockdown is it's surprisingly all right. I've always felt like the world has been moving so so fast, and all the sort of the tragedy and the kind of all of the hugely important things that are happening, notwithstanding, if we just look at the micro situation of just being in a house, I'm quite pleased things are quiet. It's quite exciting trying to source meat. I managed to source some meat from a local farm. I don't even want the meat, but the meat is arriving, and it'll just be a stranger dropping off meat on my doorstep, just like literally just dropping meat outside my house.
Amazing.
and then going.
Like, you're a lion in a zoo.
I know, and it's like the highlight of my day. Yeah. How productive are you being?
Not very.
Yeah. Which, I think that's okay, though, right?
I think that's okay. I'm being productive in different ways, I think, than my usual productivity. I am doing I do a live Facebook chapter read a day.
Lovely.
And that's quite good, because that gives me something to think about and sort of vaguely prepare for and then do, and then I think, oh, that's it. Oh, back from my day at the office, sort of thing.
Yeah, I know. I think and that's a great thing to do, because you're reaching out into the world. You know, you're like a man dropping meat at people's houses.
The meat of words.
And people are gobbling that meat up, and they're really pleased.
Yeah.
And so it's all that kind of, like, you know, doing your bit. You find little tiny ways to, you know, because you do feel weirdly helpless. You see these heroes doing these incredible things, and you sort of go, well, what can I do? And all we can do is these, you know, comparatively small and yet hopefully important.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, at least you're, exactly. If you're doing something for others. It feels like you're contributing in a very small way, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, even though we are obviously...
As long as they're not using your readings as punishment. You know what I mean? Did you used to, in that wonderful world, did you used to like play games in your head? Like if you're in the supermarket and you were pushing the trolley, if you got somewhere before someone else, it's like a sports commentary in your head.
Yeah.
You had to reach a lamppost before someone else and the crowd would go mad.
I would always do that. The place I would do that most often actually is when I'm exiting a tube train or a train, because the doors opening feels like that's like, you know, the horses starting off at the Grand National. I would always try and commentate my own life. But it's funny though, isn't it? Because you sort of think, I did think that I was the only person who did that. And then it appears that virtually everybody does that as well.
Seems like a normal thing. Yeah. I like to, if I rip the stalk off a pear, I can't help but pretend it's a hand grenade.
Amazing. I don't do that.
Give it a go. It'll change your life.
But then you eat the hand grenade in order to... That's right. In order to save the world. See, that is a trope in an Arnie... Bruce Willis action movie that just hasn't been explored, has it? The eating of the hand grenade.
Yeah, they should really give that a go.
What could be more heroic than that?
I guess in cartoons they used sometimes. I'm sure there was a cartoon where they would have, you know, remember in the old days before bomb technology moved forward and all bombs were the shape of a cannonball.
Yeah.
Was that based on anything, or did someone just draw that one day and go, someone's going, what's that? And they go, it's a bomb.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know if it's based on anything. They did use that. Yeah. I was watching.
And all that happens is it singed their hair, which didn't seem a very effective bomb.
No. If it could be withheld by a cartoon cat's body.
Yeah.
Last night we had a little family film night, and we watched Mission Impossible Fallout. I don't know if you've seen it.
I love it.
It's such a good film. Yeah. And unironically, good. I just would really enjoyed it.
It's really well made. Yeah. The action sequences are incredible. There's a bit of sort of emotion in there. There's a bit with a police officer where, and it's just like, this is the baddie is a great baddie.
Yeah.
It's a little set piece. God. Set piece after set piece. No, I watched it like twice, and then I watched it again with my son because I thought it's, you know, it's fine. And he loved it, and it's fantastic. And when you go back and you look at the earlier ones, they're so slow.
So slow. But one thing I was thinking as I was watching it, because there's a big sequence in this film where a bomb has to be detonated. What's the opposite of detonated?
Diffused.
Diffused, that's right.
Yeah. Never go to the bomb squad.
That'd be terrible, wouldn't I? And I thought to myself, why do... You know, it has that massive timer on it. You know, that handy massive timer so that everyone knows exactly when they've got to... And you sort of think, no, that's an error in the terrorists' thinking.
I think so. Certainly in the design, that was a flaw. Yeah. They're much, much smaller even on ovens.
That's
you know what I mean? On things where it, you know, really matters in day to day life.
Yeah.
It's true, and it gives them just enough time to do it. That used to bother me as a kid, those flaws in films where you just go, just shoot the guy.
Yeah.
You know? Just get it done.
Yeah.
And then you won't have to worry about it. Don't set a riddle. Don't leave. Why are you leaving? You're closing the door on this guy.
Yeah.
Just get it done. Be more efficient.
That's right.
The ruthless people are normally known for ruthlessness. And suddenly they get all whimsical.
Yeah. And it always leads to their downfall, doesn't it?
I mean, it's weird, isn't it? When you look at all the films we watch, you mentioned Mission Impossible. And when you look at all the... zombie films and apocalypse films, those writers are now, retrospectively, some of the most talented, forward-looking writers that we possibly have ever seen. Somehow, they managed to capture a mood that had never happened.
That's right. It's amazing, isn't it?
And they managed to plot exactly all the kind of the crazy things that you would just see in an opening montage.
Yeah. Well, what I found weird, I just handed a book into my agent about 6 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And the story was, because I'd seen this thing, they're called solar storms, like where the sun like jets out and these enormous bursts of radiation.
Yeah.
And in their benign form, that's what the Aurora Borealis is. But occasionally a really big one hits. And about sort of 10 years ago, we missed one of these big ones by about 2 days. The orbit was just, and had it hit, it would have knocked out all the electricity in the world at once.
Ugh.
And so I wrote the story of what happens in that instance of, and I handed it in about 6 weeks ago, and it's just now completely redundant.
Matt, I have to say, the one I'm writing at the moment is not a million miles away from that. A different, a different angle and a different sort of thing.
Yeah.
And when I started putting it all together, I was coming up with this not apocalyptic world, but not, a million miles away, but gentler. And the last 3 weeks has just rendered it. It's like say you were trying to write Die Hard and then actual things happened.
Yeah.
And then you looked at your script for Die Hard and you realized that it was essentially Last of the Summer Wine. Yeah. That's what's happened to me, and it sounds like you as well.
Yeah.
And that's sort of it's a very small problem in the scheme of things.
It is.
But it just shows when real life just turns mad.
Yeah.
Your perspective just changes completely.
It does, isn't it? I mean, in my book, I had a scene where there's a riot in the supermarket after day five, and actually in retrospect, I think I was probably quite generous.
Yes, exactly. It feels like, maybe we're both picking up on something there, because and it'd be really interesting to see how many other sort of writers in the last couple of months I remember, back in January hearing about this thing going on in China and finding stuff out and realizing, oh my God, there's something a bit weird happening here.
Yeah.
I must have been one of the first people to download Contagion. back in January, when it still seemed like, oh well, it'll never happen, but perhaps lots of people have been picking up on it for a while and putting it into their work, not realizing how much worse it was going to be.
Yeah, I know, it's crazy, isn't it? And it's what's so my first immediate selfish thought was, damn, there's all that work on down the Swanee. But
no, of course not. But I'd considered that with my one as well, and I thought, well, it's a gentler one, but actually, it's probably quite good that it's gentler, because kids who are living through this is a very, very weird time.
Yeah,
and we don't know the effects that it will have on kind of people psychologically growing up, knowing that something like this could happen, and so maybe there's a bit of escapism while still being a nod to the event.
The event, good title. Do you mind if I chat to you for a little bit about an aspect of your writing life that I am supremely envious of and would like to know exactly what it was like to be in it?
Okay, yeah, don't worry, yeah.
Which is, because I remember first seeing you on the Dave Gorman show.
Oh, yeah.
Which you wrote and produced that as well, did you?
Yeah, we produced it together and wrote it together.
Yeah, and then but you'd be in the there were shots of you in the audience, weren't there? Because they're I remember seeing your face on screen for that.
So we did it for the live shows as well, and it was always a way of giving the story another dimension.
Yeah, and I loved it. I thought it was so good.
Oh, cool.
And off the back of that, I remember buying a copy of Yes Man. So was that a couple of years afterwards? Did you write Yes Man?
Yeah,
a
book called Join Me came out before that.
That's the cult book.
That was when I started a cult. Yeah. And then after that was Yes Man. Yeah.
Yeah, and Yes Man, I'm sure everyone knows this, but Yes Man is the story of you deciding that you were going to say yes to every question that had a yes or no answer. You were going to say yes to everything.
Yeah, so it'd be questions, it'd be requests, favors, things that normally you would try and get out of, things that normally you would be you would immediately think, I can't be bothered, it was a sort of a rebellion against the can't be bothered.
Yeah.
And to see what would happen if it was like, well, I can be bothered and I will be bothered. And yeah, let's see what happens.
Yeah.
And there's lots of fun to be had. And I still to this day get letters and emails from people who have maybe picked up a copy or heard about it or found a copy in some hotel in like India somewhere.
Yeah.
And just thought, yeah, I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
And they do. And there's a lot of guys, weirdly, there's a lot of like specifically English and Scottish men who have found Scandinavian women through it. I don't know why that's become a thing.
Yeah.
There's a woman who wrote to me whose husband had gone through the classic sort of midlife crisis thing, had literally bought a sports car, had literally found a younger woman who was blonde and who worked in his office, and had literally gone, right, I'm out of here. And she was just like bereft, and her kids were grown up, and so she was sort of on her own, and she was in a routine, and she thought, well, this will be it until the day I'm gone, you know. And then she decided not to, and she decided to become a yes woman. And now she's like living in France with some younger guy of her own who's like a poet and whatever, and she's completely changed her career and she's having fun and living in the sun. And when I get letters like that where it's worked out brilliantly, and I'm sure there are thousands of cases where it hasn't
it's
worked
gone
out
very badly,
or it's gone very badly. I'm sure many people are in prison.
Yes. But, yes, I'll look after that suitcase for you.
Yeah, exactly. But this, letters like from this lady were just were just great. It's still really nice to get, you know, feedback and stuff.
Yeah, and I mean, as you've alluded to there, I'm assuming it was a sort of big hit around the world, right? This book.
Yeah, it did well. It was published in lots of different countries, and then there was a film version made,
yes.
And so that kind of spread it.
Well, that's the thing I want to talk about, is because that feels to me like the writer's dream, is uh-huh. that when your book gets picked up and turned into a Hollywood film.
Yeah, that it is. Sometimes you hear writers, they'll go, no, I would never want that.
Yeah.
And it's like, of course you would. Shut up. Like, no, you're not fit. I mean, it's great. It's exciting. Of course it is. Everyone loves films, and it's a great, you know, and this was a very easy yes. It was initially supposed to be a Jack Black film.
Uh-huh.
And for whatever reason, Jim Carrey was brought into it and wanted to do it, and then that was that. And so they were very, very nice to me, and they would send me every draft of every script, and then they would fly me out a lot, so I'd get to go out there and bring my wife, and they'd give me a little trailer, and all these you know, gave me a job title which sounded good but actually gave me, you know, less power than the person who had to bring on the pencils.
What was your job title for that film?
It was some kind of
associate
consultant producer, or you know, one of those things.
And I
they told me I'd have a parking space, and when I got there it was just literally just a sheet of A4 just pinned to a wall, but that was fine. And it was a great experience, and I got to hang out with Jim Carrey, and I saw him do, you know, in every Jim Carrey film that, you know, there was one moment watching him on set where he did the same thing three or four times, and he was just supposed to turn around and knock someone slightly, and on like the fourth time he turned around, knocked the person, some ice fell on the ground. He took a moment, and then he pretended that he slipped on it, and it was a proper Jim Carrey moment with the feet above the head. Bang, he's on the ground. And it was like, oh, amazing, done. And I thought, well, that's a trailer moment there, and that's what he's so good at. But he then walks out, and he's carrying, like, essentially a bag of peas, you know, like little bits of ice in a bag, and he's cracked a rib or something.
Oh, God.
And I was just like, it was worth it, though, wasn't it? And he just said in every film he tries to do one thing that even he doesn't know he's about to do.
Nice.
So there's a scene in a film called Fun with Dick and Jane where he's like on the ceiling, and the take they use is when he just suddenly lets go and lands on a table.
Right.
And apparently no one knew he was going to do that. He just did it because they won't insure him otherwise.
Mm.
So there's a bungee jump right at the end of the film that was actually shot the day after shooting ended, because he couldn't get insurance. No one would insure Jim Carrey to do a bungee jump. So he just went, I'll do it anyway, and we'll do it uninsured, and it'll be fine. Mm-hmm. And so he invests in a project.
Yeah. And was there any question of you being more involved in the writing of this? Or was it very much like, okay, Danny, we love the book, but we want our guys to work on the screenplay?
There's usually the option for you to kind of get involved. However, when it came to something like Yes Man, I was like, I you guys just make it. Just do your thing, because I don't write films. I could learn. But at that stage, that was, you know, a decade ago or whatever, I'd have been like, I don't know how to really get my head around this.
Yeah.
And you're ready to rock. You're ready to go. And you've got, you know, Jim Carrey. And so why don't you just, you do what you do, and I've done what I do. And, you know, that's always been my attitude to it. Get the best people for the job.
Yeah.
Rather than go, I'm going to do it. And, and then you hand it in and it's 400 pages long.
Yeah.
And people are just staring at it going, this is not how films work.
No.
So you have to learn that.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's so great about the American industry is that all these sort of agents and producers, and I'm not slating the UK, I'm slating some of the UK, but in America, they really train hard and they learn about scripts and they read 1,000 scripts and they can identify, you know, what a joke is without it having to have a rude word in it.
Yeah.
Or a big thing going, that's a joke, or a little character dialogue going, Matt jokes, you know, it's yeah. Like, they get it. And so I was like, just you crack on and do it. And it does have, you know, the beats of the film are the same as the book, but obviously there's a million different details because it's been reset in America and it's a slightly older guy. But the sort of the love story is there and the spirit of it and the beats of it. But yes, different details. But
yeah.
I always think, but the book never changes. So that's always there for the people who get annoyed about that stuff.
No, absolutely. But also, it's just thrilling to hear that it sounds like it was just great.
It was great.
A great experience.
It was absolutely, it was just great. They were so great to me. And then when they came over and they did the British side of things, they were great to me. And I got to bring all my pals out, like pals from when I was 7 at school. I was like, come on, get on the train from Loughborough, get your suit on. You're going to a premiere.
Amazing.
And I remember just standing on the red carpet with Michael Imodio, who, you know, I used to play Sega games with. When I was little,
yeah,
and him just looking up, and it's just me, him, and Jim Carrey, things like that. When you can share something like that with your pals,
yeah,
because you know this is a, you know, you hope that you'll do more things exactly like that, but you just should just enjoy it while it's there, you know.
Yeah, no, I think that's brilliant. That's I shall certainly do that when all of my books are turned into
exactly
films.
Exactly,
I like things that are good fun.
Well, yeah, I think they're better than things that aren't.
That is true. That is a good observation. But listen, thanks so much for chatting.
That's okay. Danny. Is that your dog in the background?
Yeah, I've got two. I've got two little miniature sausage dogs.
And how are they coping?
They're fine. They love it.
Yeah.
They absolutely love it. Because we're home all the time and we live in the country, so you can still kind of go for walks and stuff.
Yeah.
I sort of really, really feel for people who don't have any outside space.
I know. I've never been more grateful. I've never been more grateful to have a garden, you know.
I know. So just sort of counting blessings at the moment, I think.
Exactly. And, you know, I can always get a man to drop meat outside my house.
Yeah. Weird, isn't it?
Meat drop.
Meat drop. Oh, love it all. And there we have it. Another Word Monkeys podcast done and dusted. Thank you so much to Danny for taking the time out to chat while he was waiting for meat drops. There will be another Word Monkeys podcast along very, very soon. Now, don't forget, if you've got kids and you fancy having a cup of tea in the afternoon and you want to stick them in front of something, then I'm doing a chapter a day of my book, Mutant Zombies Cursed My School Trip, which you can find at 4 p.m. at facebook.com/MattBrownWriter. All right? So I'll see you over there. So until next time, until we meet again through the Word Monkey's door, goodbye.